Chapter 8, 10:30 GMT. The Church of St. Joseph's was about 20 minutes' walk away from house, perhaps less. Grace commandeered a smart car. They made it in 5. But as they neared their destination, they slowed up, the car having to inch through a thickening mass of people, all evidently heading for the church. An instinctive response, Tash supposed, as seen in times of crisis in the movies, and indeed what she had come to study. Still a surprising sight, though. Grace murmured a brief request into her phone. And by the time the car reached the small gate that led into the church grounds a few minutes later, there was a police drone hovering over the porch, issuing calm instructions for the crowds to step back, be patient. On the whole, the drone was being obeyed. They were able to get out of the car, into the pitch dark, make their way through the gate and towards the church door, and jump a ragged queue, their way cleared by the hovering drone and its robotic instructions. Tash found herself flinching from the jet-black sky, as if it intended to do her harm. "I'm impressed they reassigned a drone for us," she said. "So am I, if I'm honest," Grace said, opening up the car doors. "The police must have every able body out in the streets by now. Every drone in the air, just to calm things down. Even so, they don't want VIPs like us to get caught in a crush." Outside the church, Tash forced herself to take a moment to look around. The church was a pile of cold Victorian stone, put up in 1859, she knew, so nearly 2 centuries old. On this day of changes, she imagined the waves of civil construction that had washed around this sturdy pile. Probably back-to-back terracing for shipyard workers, giving way to uglier mid-20th century inner-city suburban developments, rows of shops and blocks of flats. And now that clutter had been cleared away in turn, leaving the old church as an island of heavy stone in a sparse, park-like landscape of smartwood tenements and grassy swards. All of it hard to make out today, as the streetlights patchily broke up the strange, sunless gloom. Within, the church was mostly full. The interior was dark, the church's own lights dim, much of the available illumination coming from people's glowing phones. Tash felt unreasonably glad to be out from under the sky. They found a seat, an empty pew. "So," Grace said, "why did you want to come here?" "I don't know you too well, but I didn't imagine you were religious." "I'm not. I just found this place when I went walking out of house, in the early days after the move. Peaceful place to pass a lunchtime. Now I just wanted to see how people are reacting. Turning to God. Or against him, maybe." "Well, here they all are," Grace said. "I guess you return to childhood certainties when something like this happens." "We would have, my family." Tash eyed her. "Forgive me, Grace, but I guess I don't know you as well as I should either. Your family were religious?" "Kind of. More my parents' faith than mine. We were climate refugees from Southern Africa. Scottish descent, and ardent Protestants, hence my name." She grinned and clenched a fist. "Grace. Which doesn't fit my nature too well. Parents gone now." Grace's accent was bland. Tash would never have guessed at such an ancestry. "You have other family?" "Just a sister. Still lives in Naples, Italy. That was where we were first given refuge, after the boat crossing of the Mediterranean. I was very young. Ella was smaller. But she moved away from the faith, married a guy from a Catholic background. She's pregnant, actually. Full term due around about now." "Ah, bad timing." "Yes, if everything is still going to shit because of all this. The father is long gone also. Anyhow, I think my parents would have felt at home in a church like this. And the son going out, maybe it's appropriate. It is all a bit Old Testament, isn't it?" "Well, I imagine some people might think so." She dug out a phone that was buzzing softly. "Calls from both Mel and she," she said. "Do you mind if—" "Take your calls, so long as we're back in time for the Cobra. Tash, that you?" "Hi, she. And this is Mel, listening in too. I hear you. I'm in St. Joseph's, Mel. You remember, Gateshead? We walked here a couple of times. Sure. I don't have a lot of time, you guys. We know, Mel said. Well, neither do I. If I have to hold Charlie Marlowe's hand through a virtual briefing for your Cobra meeting. Jim is in trouble, she said bluntly. That shut them up. He summarised the plight of the Almirich. In deep space, powerless, drifting off course. Tash shook her head. I don't know what to say, she. I can hardly imagine it. We've all been bound up by problems down here. Well, there are 10 billion down there. Only a handful up here. All precious, she. All precious. Mel again. And how about you, she? How's Lodestone? We don't have Jim's immediate power crisis. We have a bank of batteries in an emergency and a small nuke reactor. We were in a permanent shadow anyhow. We don't rely on solar power save for topping up the batteries. But we are drifting out of position also. One would assume a common cause, but we will have to fix our drift, eventually. We've the resources to do that and can be readily rescued if not. And Jim's crew will need to get back on course for Earth, if they have the resources, if they survive that long. She, I don't understand, Tash broke in. She glanced at Grace, who looked as confused as she felt. I think I'm behind the curve here. What are you talking about? Why are all the spacecrafts drifting off course? We'll work it out, Mel snapped, and Tash was surprised by her ferocity. We'll science this damn thing, no matter how big it is. The drift is just another clue to help us solve it all. Have faith, guys, if that's not a contradiction. Faith in the science. We will come out of this one way or another. She was silent. Tash said, We're listening, She. But while there's life, there's hope. Grace said, standing up, Hope, maybe, but no time. Come on, kid. Time to go face Cobra. They had been in the church only a few minutes. Tash followed reluctantly, keeping her phone open. On the way back, in the car, just as they approached house, with Grace fretting about delays, Mel made another call. Hey, Tash, we lost Jupiter. I mean, it just went out as a brilliant star-like object in the deep night sky over this southern ocean. I'd like to pretend I'm trying to figure distances and times in my head as we speak. Well, try harder, honey. Jupiter is around 5 astronomical units from the sun, 5 times Earth's distance. So sunlight reflected from Jupiter has to travel 10 AU, roughly, to reach our eyes here on Earth. And since it takes light about 8 minutes to cross 1 AU, 1 hour and 20 minutes. She checked her watch again. So we lost Jupiter at 11:10 GMT. You know, it all makes sense. Given the vast horror of the loss of the sunlight, the rest is following logically, even obeying physical law, such as the light speed limit. You make sure you tell your minister that. And, like I said, tell him we will figure this out, one clue at a time. That's the hope, the promise. We're there, Grace said, and pushed open the door before the car had stopped.